So in this second part, we will focus on the practice of empathy, which is a further development of speech practice. And I'll say two things about the first part. My hope is to give a few practices which you can take home. And I wanted to mention two further possibilities. One is, yes? Handouts? They're here. There's a website called dharmaseed.org. And probably many of you know this website. It has most of the talks from Spirit Rock, from IMS, from Gaia House, where Zohar often teaches, that's in England, and many other centers. And it's all on a Dharma basis. And there are a lot of talks there. I have further talks. I have about 500 talks on Dharma Seed. More than anyone here will ever listen to. Unless you are a real, real fan. Okay. And so, but there are a lot of talks on speech practice. And some of the retreats that I've talked about, the longer retreats, we have the talks from those retreats. And you can listen to them. And so it's a resource that can, if you want to go further. And the other thought which occurred to me was that maybe we should try to leave some time, Aviv and Zohar, at the end. We had talked about this for maybe organizing, because maybe, you know, 10 of you in Tel Aviv or in Jerusalem, maybe you want to do something to keep the practices of this retreat going after the retreat. Maybe you have 10 people, we want to keep this going further. You can listen to the recordings from this retreat, and you can listen to Dharma Seed, and maybe you meet once a week for 8 weeks or something. And that would be a very good way to keep things going. Because it's very, you know, we're trying to really, we would say, sow seeds, to have seeds out there, but they have to be watered, and has to be good sun. I think no problem about enough heat. Okay, so just wanted to mention that. So this session now, before lunch, is on empathy. I'm going to have to be a little bit quick, because I had hoped for 1 hour, and I have 35 minutes. So I want to talk some about empathy, and then do a practice together. And that will be based on the handout that will also give you a further practice for speech practice, which is very important, and the applications to family, work, service in the world, and to activism are very, very clear, quite connected some with some of Aviv's stories. So empathy is a natural capacity. It's something which everyone has. We can define it as the capacity to tune in and to know the emotions, the way of thinking, and even the whole sense of the other person's actions fairly directly. And we particularly focus on empathy in being aware of the other person's emotions and the other person's way of thinking. And it's, like I say, it's a natural capacity to know what they are. Now, we can have the ability to know what someone else is feeling and not necessarily have good intentions. Psychopath has empathy. Meaning, the psychopath knows what other people are feeling and uses that knowledge for manipulative purposes, for bad purposes. So empathy is, in itself is somewhat neutral. Politicians can have a certain amount of empathy, know what people are feeling, and manipulate, right? So that's an important understanding, because empathy is a natural capacity, but and generally, when we're empathic, it's more connected with understanding and compassion. But it's important to know that it's not necessarily, because it's a capacity that all human beings have. You know, they've done research on the brain, and they locate basically three areas of empathy in the brain. So there really actually are three kinds of empathy. One is to be aware of the emotions, and that's, I think, more in the limbic system of the brain. And then there's another type of empathy, which is more cognitive, which is to be aware of the kind of the way of thinking, or the thinking, what is meaningful on a more cognitive level for someone. And then there's another kind of empathy which is connected with almost like tuning into the body movements. Like they do research, like when we see someone just walking, we have a kind of, in our brains, there are what are called mirror neurons, some of you know this, that actually almost like we have the sense, oh, I know what it's like to walk. It's very interesting, right? And so what we'll be doing is taking this capacity of empathy and connecting it with the intention to use the capacity of empathy for understanding and compassion and skillful action. And that's usually what we mean. Usually when you hear the word empathy, it's a good thing, right? But I think I just wanted to point out that that's not necessarily the case. A lot of people think that, yeah.
What was the second one?
The second one was more cognitive, the way of thinking. Yeah.
Can you expand on that?
Yeah, we'll go into that more. It'd be more like to, to know what is meaningful for me. Like right now, if you're being empathic, you would know that it's meaningful for me for you to understand what I am saying. Okay. And so if you were empathic towards me, towards that more cognitive level, you would know that it's important for me to understand, for you to understand. Does that make sense?
I didn't quite get it yet.
Yeah, I got it. So can you maybe, I'll come back to that. Are you okay to come back to that a little later, because what we'll do later will make it very clear, okay? So a lot of people think that empathy, in the sense that we're developing it, is very, very central for the evolution of humanity. You know, especially at a time when there is so much suffering in the world. And, there was a whole book written by an American author named Jeremy Rifkin called The Empathetic Civilization. He thought the next evolutionary development in humanity will be based on a great increase in the positive sense of empathy. And I have a quotation that was from someone wrote during the election. He said, "I think that the lack of empathy is the most pressing issue in America." This was at a time of the election when many groups were seen in stereotypes, right? No empathy for, you know, in the U.S. often from some of the candidates. I will not name the names. where there was lack of empathy towards women, Muslims, African Americans, Latinos, and so forth. Lack of empathy. He said, "I think the lack of empathy is the most pressing issue in America. And it's more compelling than national security threats, bad trade deals, unpaid taxes, and deleted emails." These are, some of you know the references. Yeah. So, and I tend to agree with that, that the empathy is very, very important for our practice. And it's a natural capacity, but it gets blocked, right? That our ability to be empathic towards others gets blocked. And often, we are only empathic towards people close to us, or just a few people. And our whole groups of people, we are not empathic towards. I think this is true in every country, right? That and so deliberate cultivation of empathy can be a very, very important practice. And it's actually very simple. And it's a beautiful, beautiful practice. And so, you know, maybe I could ask you, what gets in the way of empathy? What makes empathy hard? Maybe, what's your immediate response? Yeah.
Fear.
Fear. When there's fear, you know, literally you can study it at the level of the brain. You know, the brain gets focused on survival, and these other parts of the brain have no possibility of being used, right? So fear makes empathy very hard, and of course that's quite common, right? What else? Yeah.
Tiredness.
Tiredness, right? Tiredness, lack of energy. It takes a little bit of energy to have empathy, yeah. At least, yeah. Others, yeah.
I think more and more virtual communication, and not.
That's right. Yeah.
More. See the face of the person you're speaking with.
Yeah. Very good. More and more virtual communication. They've actually done research. I probably the same all around the world. They've done research in the U.S. and they show that for teenagers, the more they are on electronics, the less empathy. It's pretty clear research. You know, the more people are on electronics, the less empathy they have. And of course, there are a lot of young people who actually are scared to have direct communication with others. And I know in many places, people are 10 feet away and they use texting to communicate, right? Probably here, very similar, right, I would think. And so, what else gets in the way of empathy? Yeah.
I think I just confused maybe between empathy and compassion.
Yeah. Okay.
When it's hard to feel empathy to other, or it's hard to feel compassion.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Empathy. Empathy is first of all a natural capacity. I think compassion is as well. Empathy is more purely receptive. We are just taking something in, and with empathy, it can be for anything that someone is feeling. Compassion is a little bit different. That compassion seems to be a different part of the brain when they do the research, but I think it's quite closely connected. It depends how you use the words. But compassion is more the awareness of something that is difficult or painful. So it's different than empathy in that it's focused on what is difficult. And compassion can be both receptive, and typically compassion is active. I want to do something to help, right? And thus empathy is not like that. So I think there's some overlap, but they're different. And some research shows that you can get, you know, people talk probably in Israel about compassion fatigue. Do you use that word? Or you get that people working with people with, you know, maybe if you're a nurse or doctor or even therapist, that you get, you know, in English you would say you have compassion fatigue, you have compassion tiredness, you know the word burnout, you have that. And so they did research and they actually see that you actually get tired from empathy. But if you really have compassion, you don't get tired. Pretty interesting, because they're actually a little bit different parts of the brain. So does that help to clarify the difference? Yeah. Yeah, so what else gets in the way? What else blocks empathy? Yeah.
Ignorance.
Ignorance blocks a lot. Yeah. So if we, you know, if we simply don't know much about people, it's harder to be empathy, to have empathy, right? Whether it's someone, you know, around the corner, or in a different neighborhood, or in a different social group, yeah? Please.
Hatred?
Hatred? yeah, hatred, fear, being very judgmental. Empathy has very little chance, right? Okay, so we have a sense, right? Maybe last one, yeah.
Being self-centered, yeah.
Being self-centered, very hard to even care about other people. Or again, maybe it's just I care about three people and not about 7.5 billion, right? And that's very common. And I've seen copies of the Nazi officers or the commandants of the camps with their families. Seem to be a lot of empathy with their family, but it ends at the door, right? And so that's something like that is very common, right? So we have a sense of what blocks empathy. And what does it feel like when there is empathy? When you feel understood, or you feel like someone really understands your feelings and gets them, how does that feel?
Harmony.
Huh?
Harmony.
Yeah, harmony.
Space.
Huh?
Spaciousness.
Yeah, it feels spacious, but it can feel, does it feel good?
Yes.
Yeah? It feels very good. Yeah. I have a quotation somewhere. Well, it was from it's from a psychologist. He says, when you feel understood, it feels damn good. That's a technical term in psychology. Okay. It can feel wonderful. And sometimes the most important thing often for many of us is simply to feel understood, to feel seen, to feel that our lives matter, right? And a lot of social problems come about when there's the breakdown of empathy. And I'll just say one other thing, then we'll do an exercise, that when you have, in most societies, there are different groups, right? And generally, we have one way of talking about it is to say that we have the in-group and the out-group. Do you know, we have the group that I'm part of, and in the group that I'm part of, a lot of differences, but generally, I tend to have more empathy for people in my group, and I understand them better. I know the rules of how they interact. When there's another group in society, and this could be in the US, this could be like people of European background and African Americans, and it'd be counterparts in other societies. With the out-group, we often don't understand them well. We don't understand the rules or how they interact. We tend to have much less empathy. We tend to see them not as individuals anymore, but as representatives of the group. And that tends to happen. Seeing them as a representative of the group rather than an individual makes empathy very hard, if not impossible. And that's common in all societies, right? So on the other hand, you can do empathy practice and consciously break that down to work against that, right? And so that's, when you have difficulties between groups in a society, one of the practices that you might do is deliberately simply try to understand, right? Or get to know members of the other group, get to know them well. And it's not just different social groups. Sometimes it's something just like men and women, or people of different groups, people who are of different sexual orientations or different educational levels. There's some similarities with those kind of social differences. Does that make sense? And so empathy becomes actually a very beautiful, powerful practice, okay? So we're going to do empathy practice now, one version of it, okay? That I developed with my colleague when we do the speech training. And this is a form of empathy practice that's based on another part of our speech training where we use nonviolent communication. So many of you have studied this, I think. NVC, how many of you know some NVC? It was developed by a man named Marshall Rosenberg, who died a year or two ago. And I won't explain the system, but just to say that it has different components. And the sheet that we have here that has feelings on one side and needs on another comes from that approach. And so the kind of empathy practice that we'll do works with two of the three kinds of empathy. It basically, as someone speaks, you try to listen for what are the emotions. Here they're called feelings, which is, I think it's much better in English to use the word emotion, because feeling means many things in English. So I would say use the word emotion. But the idea is that this is, you know, sadness, fear, joy, happiness, etc. Those are the emotions. And I gave you this so you could have a long list of emotions. Most of us just know a few, right? So this gives you more emotional, what we call emotional literacy. Do you know that word? Emotional education. So we try to be aware of the emotions, and then we try to be aware also of what in this system are called needs. We like to use the language, what matters for the person. You know, and so this is the more cognitive dimension. That was what I was saying I would return to for the person in the back. So needs here are, or the sense of what matters, some people would call them values. And these are always positive. So there are needs for freedom, for autonomy. There is a need for connection. There is a need for meaning. There is a need for physical well-being. These are all positive. And it's important to know this. This plays a very important role with empathy. There are also, in this way of looking, there is a very important distinction between needs, or what matters, and strategies. Strategies are the way, the approach that you use to try to meet your need, to try to get your need satisfied, right? And so the strategy, the need is always positive. The strategy is often very bad, right? So we can understand, for example, security for a country is a very important value, and it's good, right? The strategy you use to get security can be very bad, right? For a country or for anything. So does that make some sense? Another example, someone who is alcoholic wants peace, right? May have the need for peace. That's valuable. That's legitimate. No problem. But uses the strategy of drinking to try to find peace. That is not helpful or skillful. So a very, very important distinction that we make, and it can really change your mind about people. Many people we have difficulties with, we have difficulty with their strategy. We may not have difficulty, typically, if we really tune into what matters for them, we may actually be able to have empathy. And this is actually very important for peacemaking and for all sorts of things. So, most of the difficulties are about the strategies, right? So someone who is a peacemaker is trained to see the needs and be clear about the strategies, but be aware of the needs, because that's the way that you bring about resolution of conflict. And sometimes it's hard to see, right? Because people get very, very focused on the strategy or the position. Those are different than the underlying need. And we'll look more at that when we look at conflict, because it gives, a clear way of working with conflict. Okay? So I think we ran out as much time as I wanted, but we'll do an empathy practice with me. I will say something, and I wanted to do this practice with everyone, but I think for now we probably don't have time. So the practice is, I will speak for 2 minutes about something that is meaningful to me. Okay? And I want you to listen. What are my emotions? And what matters for me? And I want you maybe you can write down or just think of 2 or 3 emotions and two or three things that seem to matter, okay? And I'll just talk kind of normally, not about anything special, and we can start to get a sense of what empathy practice is like. It's basically consciously saying, I want to listen for the emotions, and I want to listen for what matters, okay? Okay, ready? So we'll set the intention, okay? Listen, your work is to listen as I speak for 2 minutes about my emotions, just get two or three, and what matters, okay? So take about 10 seconds to get ready. Okay, Wednesday evening, I went on a tour of Tel Aviv with a cousin, I think, of someone who is often a manager here. Some of you know Yulia. Anyone know Yulia? Okay. And her family is connected with a famous family in Tel Aviv called the Schlush family. Do you know that? And this young man is named Tomer, and his great-grandfather was Aaron Shalush, originally from Algeria, and he was one of the founders, you know, when we went. So anyway, so that was, for me, very wonderful. He was very kind. He took us on about a three-hour tour of Tel Aviv, and we walked all the way to Jaffa, and so we started to know some about Jaffa as well. And it was wonderful just to learn history and get this from someone whose great-grandfather was Aaron Shalush. And we walked through the neighborhood of Neve Sedek, which is where his great-grandfather lived. We saw all these houses where his family had lived. It was very interesting, and just to go by, to learn the history, you know, to see, learn more about Tel Aviv, the important buildings. I think we started in the building where there was Ben-Gurion did the Declaration of Independence, and then we walked around and went into Neve Zedek and got the history of Jaffa, and walked by the ocean, saw the different families by the ocean. What emotions did you hear?
Excitement.
Gratitude, joy.
Interest.
Huh?
Interest.
Thankfulness. Yeah.
Involved.
Interest. Yeah. So here you can use this sheet to help you to identify emotions. And maybe there's a counterpart in Hebrew, okay? So that's very good. You learned six emotions, many of them I didn't even realize were there, okay? And now, how about the sense of what matters for me?
Learning.
Yeah?
To understand and to be understood.
What?
To understand and to be understood.
Yeah, to understand and... there wasn't so much about me here, you know, so I think maybe, yeah, but to be understood is important, but were you learning something else? Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I connect to something you said, because in the beginning it was important for you that people will confirm that they know certain people, so I didn't know
how to say that, yeah.
What's the need of that?
Yeah, what would it be? It's a kind of meaning.
Meaning
and maybe connection. You know, it's like I could have a sense of more connection to the history of Tel Aviv because here's someone whose family was very central, right?
Learning and understanding.
What?
Learning and understanding,
yeah, very, very much, yeah.
Appreciation,
yeah. There was a lot of, it's kind of the emotions and the meaning start to connect some here, right? Gratitude and appreciation, yeah. Yeah.
What about the need to share and to be listened to?
Yeah, to Yeah, because I didn't mention this, but I asked a lot of questions, and he, Tumar answered all my questions, so there was a sense of sharing, interaction, which was about connection, right?
I meant right now.
Very good. Like right now, the sharing and sharing with you. Yeah? Yeah, very good. So okay, last one. Yeah, so maybe we could find that under meaning, yeah? Knowing, understanding, yeah. So, that was not hard, right? It's pretty easy. You all did well, and it felt wonderful. It feels very good to have empathy. You really are listening carefully. And this is all that empathy is, right? It's just, it's something that's not hard for us. We can really practice it. The way of practicing is to do exactly what we just did with others. You know, maybe we'll find another time where you can practice it yourself. Do you have a sense of how you do it? So the exercise that I was going to do would simply be to get in pairs, and one person does something similar. They just talks about something for 2 minutes that's meaningful, nothing dramatic, right? You talk about, I really liked breakfast. Okay, or whatever, you know. Last week my sister had this happen that was very nice. You know, something very simple. So you can see why empathy is beautiful. It leads to connection, right? It leads to a sense of feeling of being understood. And again, it may be. Maybe, you know, aside from getting enough to eat, it may be the most important thing in life may just simply be to feel understood, right? To feel connected, to feel like people care. And this is very simple, very basic. And yet, as we saw earlier, in so many parts of society, there's no empathy. Most social problems are linked with a lack of empathy. And so simply to bring empathy into places where it is not. It's very simple. It can be hard, of course it can be hard, but you know, I'll give one example, and then Aviva will give one example, and then we'll have lunch. Okay? And so I guess to give a very simple example, let's see. You know, one of the areas that we've been developing in many of the Dharma centers in the U.S. is having more sensitivity to people in different groups, particularly in the U.S., what we would call people of color, African Americans, people from Asia, and so forth. And a lot of what is involved is simply listening, getting to know people, hearing the stories, and, you know, developing friendships, and it changes everything. You know, one of the things that's actually hopeful in the U.S., I think it's harder here, one of the things that's hopeful in the U.S. is that the level of intermarriage is quite high between the different groups. And I think it's, people maybe who are European American, and then they have someone who enters the family who is African American or Asian American, and they get to know the stories, they get to know the history, and suddenly they become very sensitive. And they're actually also willing sometimes to take stands, to speak up, just from empathy, just from knowing people. And you know, one of the hopeful signs I think in the US is that there is so much intermarriage that I think among European Americans, 40% have someone who is not European American in their family. And it changes a lot. It makes sense. I know that I've asked about that here, and that's for different reasons in terms of the people variously called, you know, Arab Israelis or Palestinian Israelis. That's harder here for many reasons, right? It's not happening as much, right, as I understand. But but I wasn't so much meaning to point to the situation here, but just to say that very natural empathy starts changing things on a social level. It's very, you know, it's not surprising, right? You get to know someone, and there's caring. There's more caring, and you connect, and maybe you, you know, read different books, you learn about different people, you have an interest. So that's just one small example of how empathy can actually have major impact. Yeah. So, just a few minutes?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. I will continue in English. It's going to be very short. So, okay. So just to say, because prepared a few more stories, but for lack of time, we're not.
Can come back later.
Maybe later, but if we don't. It's quite amazing how situations that are considered, not considered, they are, a lot of conflict, hostility, aggression, how much room they give for expression of compassion. So just to know. And I will choose just one story that is not one of the success stories, but I think it's not one of these wow, inspiring stories, but I think that the lesson is very important. And in a Palestinian village that we have a good, we've been going there and knowing people there, like in any other place, there are people who are ill, who are handicapped, and we were requested to see the condition of a woman that was sick as a baby, and because of that she's paralyzed all her life, and she's 30 years old. And one of the things we did is we asked a friend of ours who is not part of the group, an Israeli physiotherapist, to come with us and to see her. And for the Israeli young woman, like in her 20s, it was a very unique experience for her. It was maybe even the first time in a Palestinian village. It's not something she feels comfortable doing. And she came to help, and you know, the family wanted the help, and the Palestinian woman, the handicapped woman, she really loved getting, you know, someone to care about her and to be interested in her. And it was an amazing encounter that really heart opening for everyone. And it was very difficult to leave. We didn't want to leave. They didn't want us to leave. It was very, very beautiful. So it's a very, let's say, simple act of empathy, of compassion. Many people do it daily, okay? And this is what we saw. There may be special circumstances that, yeah, the Israeli, it's between an Israeli and a Palestinian, and usually it doesn't get to happen between an Israeli and a Palestinian. And after a day or two, the Israeli physiotherapist, she phoned me to say that from the village, when we said goodbye, she went to meet her parents, and their parents were having lunch with very good friends of theirs, and she told them where she's coming from and what happened and what a wonderful experience it was. And those friends, who are very, very good friends, they became very, very angry. And they, you know, I don't know what they said, but they spoke, they attacked her fiercely for caring about a Palestinian. And she couldn't take it, she couldn't handle it. She was very, very hurt. And she basically left, okay? So this is also, I think, a very common story, and happens quite a lot. And the reason I'm saying it is, I'm giving this story, is because, again, like we can come with our good intentions, and sometimes it can be very transformative. Sometimes we basically meet people with the same intentions, and everything is so beautiful. And quite a lot of times, yeah, maybe we get a slap in the face. And so society actually teaches us that empathy and compassion are not such a good thing. Okay? Like for this woman now to meet again the friends of her parents and to feel connection with them will be quite difficult. And maybe the next time she thinks about telling someone about Palestinians, maybe she'll be a little bit, afraid, maybe how they will react. And it's a snowball effect. One thing leads to the other, and okay, I'll protect myself, and I won't be empathetic. And if people behave to me like that, then okay, maybe I'll copy them, and I also be aggressive because, and so on. So the reason I chose just this story is to emphasize how what, for example, we are trying to do here, we all of us together with you, and you yourselves, if you practice empathy, practice compassion, try to cultivate it, it's actually, we have a very big job of creating a new culture or transforming or offering a change to the culture we are living in that, many times teaches us to do differently. So this is I can call it a responsibility, but also this is something very, very precious that if we succeed in doing it, and it's not just each one of us individually, it's we, we're a kind of a sort of a community, then it can be very, very meaningful, valuable, and hopefully it will happen.
Just one or two more things, then we have lunch. I'll see if we can find further times for more empathy practice in our retreat. And the other thing is that what you can do, in all of these practices, we generally develop them and train where it's a little easier. So you can... When you work to develop empathy, maybe in situations like right here, that was not difficult, right? You could develop empathy. You do it with people close to you, just normal conversations, and you can train doing exactly the practice. Tune into the emotions, what matters. Do that over and over again. So you can start to see how you have very wonderful practices off the cushion, right? You can see that. These are wonderful practices. So keep on training with that, and then you can start bringing it into situations which are more difficult. The principle of training is you develop the capacity where it's easier, you get it stronger, and then you bring it into difficult circumstances. I mean, life is not always so orderly. Sometimes you train and you immediately get a difficult thing. But generally, if you can, you train and develop where it's easier, and then you gradually bring it into the harder situations. Okay? So we'll go back into silence now. Let's just take a minute or two just to have a little bit of quiet. We'll go back into silence again for the next 2 hours, actually. 2.5 hours. So we have time for lunch now. And I'll just say one thing I forgot to mention is that we can do empathy towards ourselves. If you ever have a difficult moment, you can just say, what am I feeling? What matters for me? Also, very good moments, okay? Okay.